What up, everyone? Welcome to episode 11 of the DIY Financial Sense Show. I'm your host, Zach, and today we have Bernadette Joy, the founder of Crush Your Money Goals, joining us on the show. Bernadette is known for taking personal finance personally. Overwhelmed and ignored by traditional advice as a young woman of color, she taught herself not just to talk the talk, she walks the walk, having paid off over $300,000 of debt in 3 years, and it doesn't stop there. She then went on to build her first $1 million net worth by the age of, get this, 36. Bernadette, thank you so much for joining me on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Absolutely. Now, before we dive into it, I've got two questions here for you just to kind of ease into it a little bit. And the first question is, if you could recommend a book, what would it be?
Sure. So this is actually the book that I send to all of my clients when I start working with them, and it's not what they expect. It's called The Boy, the Mole, the Fox, and the Horse, and it's by Charlie Macri, and it's basically a picture book.
And really?
Yeah, and it's the best book ever. I'm not going to spoil it, but if you're feeling like you're a little lost right now and feeling in a bit of a slump, it's a great book for all ages. And I actually reread it once a week.
Are you serious?
Yeah. It's very short.
I'll have to check that out. Definitely check that out. Yeah. No spoilers, but I appreciate that. I have never heard of that book before. So I am definitely going to be checking that one out.
It's a great it's a great one to share with friends too.
Awesome. So the second question I have here for you is, if you had a billboard that would be seen by millions of people every single day, what would you want inscribed on it? It could be a paragraph, a single word, but it's going to be seen by millions of people every single day.
What a good question. The thing that comes top of mind, and maybe we'll talk a little bit more about it. People who know me know I like to ask a lot of questions. And even though I talk about money, what I really think I'm helping people with is, you know, kind of managing through life. And so the question I would ask everyone is, are you living your legacy? So not leaving a legacy, but are you living it right now?
I like that, because everyone always talks about kind of having a legacy and leaving it, but that really forces you to have that being present mind state. Where are you living your legacy and being present about it?
Yes. It's very, very now versus like, let's push this off until later, or wait until I have enough money, or wait until I do this thing or the other. And that's actually been a question I've been pondering for myself a lot lately.
Yeah, actually, not to go down a rabbit hole, but I was just talking to a buddy of mine about something similar about this, where if you look at yourself in a future state and you had everything that you wanted, what would you be doing? And it's like, well, can you do some of those things today? And a lot of times the answer is yes. You can start taking those same actions right away. So yeah. I really do like that. I think that's a fantastic thing to put on a billboard.
I love it.
So Bernadette, one of the things I kind of hope to kind of kick off is just to do maybe like a 30,000 foot view of where you got started, how you went down this personal finance journey, and maybe even walk us through how you started to accumulate all of this debt. And then what was that breaking point for you that where you were just like, hey, I got to switch gears. I got to do something a little bit different.
Sure. So again, I'm Bernadette Joy. I would say that the journey really started about 5 years ago. And 5 years ago was, well, 5 years younger. I was 35, I guess. And I had just finished up my MBA program, which was supposed to be the golden ticket to like what I was going to do with my life. And prior to doing the MBA program, I had done exactly what my, you know, very Asian parents told me to do, which was, you know, go get good grades, go to a good college. I got not one, but two bachelor's degrees, then get a good job
at a
Fortune 100 company, go get that six-figure salary. I did like everything I was supposed to do. And then one day I woke up and I was like, I am freaking miserable. Like, this is all. Like, is this how the rest of my life is supposed to be? And at the time, I thought it was my career that was the issue. And so I went back to school to get my MBA and figured like, you know what, I'll just switch careers and I'll feel much better. And 2.5 years later, MBA program was great. I got to travel around the world, which gave me a lot of really interesting insight, and started dabbling into entrepreneurship. But when I finished the program, I still really had no clue what I wanted to do next. But now I had six figures of student loan debt, right? So that was not the intended plan. And the breaking point that I had was I was sitting in my last semester of classes. I had 10 weeks left to go in this program. And I was like, wow, I'm about to graduate. I should probably figure out like how much I owe. I have no idea. I signed my name on a piece of paper and I'm like, you know, I'm sure there's some significant amount, but no clue. And I was sitting in the class and, you know, not paying attention in class and looking at my student loans and seeing how much interest it had already accumulated. And I was like, wait, I don't understand this. I thought I didn't accumulate interest until after, you know, graduate. Like, clearly I did not understand what I stood up for, which was embarrassing for the fact that I was going for an MBA, right? Like this kind of like finance 101. And realized, oh my gosh, you know, the suggested plan is 10 years to pay off the student loan. And I was like, 10 years? 10 years? No, thank you. And by that time, I had already also had a mortgage. I had a car payment. I had, you know, like all of the usual adult stuff. Mm-hmm. And it just seemed untenable. It just did not seem like, I literally felt like I got hit with a ton of bricks. So I cried a lot. And I would love to tell you, I was like, you know, one of those like, oh, like I'll figure this out and no problem. No, I cried a lot. And then once I cried and then I talked to my husband about like basically what an F up I made. His reaction was, I mean, what's the big deal? Like literally all our friends have student loan debt. Like this is normal. And, mm-hmm. and I pretty much verbatim said to him, well, if this is normal, I don't want it. So after I cried and had that, I started researching on how to pay off student loans, how to pay student loans fast. And all of the information that was out there was like very generic, taught by people who had not been to college in like 30 years, mm-hmm. and was basically very much of the, you know, like, well, the reason that you're broke is because you eat avocado toast kind of situation. I was like,
drink coffee all the time, avocado toast. Yeah.
Yeah. Like this is your fault. Right. So, I started piecing together all this different information and basically, you know, came up with my own, you know, recipe around it. And, you know, the good news is, less than a year after graduation paid off, $72,000.
Oh, wow.
Debt, and then, a couple of years later paid off a rental property, and then a couple of years after that paid off my house. So then in less than 3 years paid off $300,000 of debt, or a little more than 3 years actually, paid off $300,000 of debt. And then just last year, or just this past year, my husband and I hit our first $1 million in net worth.
So, congratulations, that's awesome.
Thank you. So that's pretty much it in a nutshell.
That is incredible. So one of the things I want to do is circle back a little bit and just kind of get a better understanding, maybe your perspective, because you kind of said, you know, you had all this school debt and even your husband said, hey, look, all of our friends are doing it. This is normal. What do you think was a little bit different where you were like, hey, you know what? I don't want to be normal. I don't want this school debt. What was going through your mind that it wasn't okay to have all this?
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, maybe it's me being neurotic. Maybe it's, you know, I don't know. I don't know if a lot of other people think this way, but, I felt that like pit in my stomach.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever you feel a pit in your stomach, that's usually your body telling you this is not right. Something's not right about this. But what I've noticed is a lot of other people seem to have a higher tolerance for that pit in the stomach, and I just don't. And and so I was like, I just literally can't imagine feeling this way for 10 years. And that might be an over-exaggeration, some people would say, but you know, I think when I thought about all the things that I wanted to do and rather be doing, right? Traveling, mm-hmm. and being able to start a small business and being able to, you know, leave a legacy for my family, it just felt like this was a big obstacle. And so pragmatically, I was just like, the sooner this obstacle is over with, the sooner I can move on with the things that I actually really care about. And I think rather than, you know, going the prescribed route, and then, you know, the other side of it is from a mathematical perspective, you know, when I pulled out all those calculators of like, what are you actually paying for this after interest? I was like, why, like logically to me, why does it make sense to pay like 3 or 4 times the amount, you know, of what it originally costs if I follow this plan of normal 10 years? Like, that just seems dumb to me. So, you know, that's part of it was rational from a mathematical perspective, but more of it was just wanting to feel a lot less stressed.
Yeah. Well, I think that, yeah, definitely important because, yeah, I like what you did there, kind of projected yourself in the future, even carrying that emotional weight with you. And it's just like, it's not a good feeling. Why would I want to keep going through this? And so that was, that's really cool. What was your first steps then? So, you know, you're thinking about, hey, I really don't want to do this. You're online just Googling, you know, how to pay off school debt early. But even like sometimes it's hard to wrap your head around where when you're seeing the big number, $300,000, it's hard to break it into, okay, here's my action steps, here's my plans, because you want to break it down to digestible steps. What were you doing in those early stages to kind of say, this is how I'm going to go about attacking it?
Yes. Well, that's a perfect segue into, you know, my company, why it's called Crush Your Money Goals. The crush stands for the steps. So whenever I get asked this question, I noticed, you know, after the fact that I kind of repeated the same thing over, and it turns out it serendipitously, I made it spell out the word crush. So the first step, which this is the one that everybody glosses over, everybody, right? And everyone's like, no, but tell me like the real thing to do. And it sounds super woo-woo, but the first step is cultivating a positive mindset towards money. And I'm going to say this is specifically for women. I've noticed like there's a lot of fear. There's a lot of shame. There's a lot of guilt when it comes to even thinking about this. And I mean, how many people are going around and telling people, oh, I have $72,000 of student loan debt. A lot of my friends and family thought I was like, what is wrong with you? Like, why are you telling everybody this? And I was like, I don't feel guilty about it. I don't feel shameful about it. I got past my crying, but I don't feel ashamed about it because I know I'm going to get it done. Like, I know it's not going to be here forever. So the first real step is like grappling with the feelings of, you know, why it feels so heavy. And for a lot of people, it's different. Like some of it is shame, some of it is guilt, some of it is apathy, which is not a great, not a great emotion either. But what I've unwrapped too is that like the fear part is really real for people. So cultivating a positive mindset, but then the R in crush, which is reverse engineering your goals. That is where I really started breaking it down into manageable steps. And just logically speaking, at the time I realized how much, you know, student loan debt I had, I started paying off some of it immediately. Like I started paying back the earliest loans. It turns out if the loan is, I can't remember now, but it was like less than 90 days old, like you can pay it now and pretend like it like never existed, as in like it won't accrue any interest. So I started doing that first, but then I was still left with like $72,000. And so I was like, okay, $72,000. When do I want this ish done? And most people will say, well, you know, I'll just take however long. And I was like, no, I'm putting a hard line in the sand. This is when it's going to get done. And so it was like 2 years. And my husband was like, that sounds insane. I don't know what you're thinking, right? But I was like, but listen, I was like, 72,000 divided by 2 years is $36,000 a year. That is divided by 12 months is $3,000 a month, broken down by, you know, 4 weeks, right? That's about $750 a week. That's about $100 a day. I can figure out how to make or save $100 a day, I think. That's what I think. And $100 a day is like still a lot, right? But it's way easier than thinking about $72,000.
Oh, absolutely. Right?
So little by little every day, the you and crush was using your resources efficiently. It's literally, what can I do to either save or make $100 today and put it towards my debt? And that's how I started.
Awesome. I like that. What are some of the first steps? So I like the idea of how you said, you know, let's put a positive spin on money and change your mindset a little bit, because you're coming from a negative context. Anytime you're thinking about debt, it just has a negative feeling. So how do you change your perspective and view money in a positive way? What are some things, how do you do that?
Yeah, the most practical, and again, this is not like, I'm not saying anything that's rocket science, is having more conversations about it and talking with more people. So the way I was able to really start getting out of the shame around it was, again, I started telling everybody, like, I've got $72,000 of debt. Like, don't be asking me to go take, you know, go get tequila shots like tonight. I'm not doing it, right? But I started posting about it on social media, which is kind of like the opposite of what you're supposed to be doing in social media. You're supposed to be like saying like how like you're killing the game. And I was posting about how I was trying to save money and how I was like doing little side hustles and stuff. And one day I finally got the courage of like, I was about halfway through. So I was around like 40K like left to go. And I was like, you know what? I'm really freaking proud of myself. It's been like a couple of months and I've paid off $32,000 of debt. And so I post it, and I, this is how I started too. I would always start out with a post-it on my refrigerator. And anytime the number went down, like I would, you know, put a new post-it. I don't care if it was like $5, I would like change it, right? So like it became kind of a game of like, ooh, can I change the post-it today? How many times can I change the post-it today, right? And so I posted the picture of the post-it, and, you know, in the caption, I said something along the lines of, you know, I've been on this journey for a couple of months and I've paid off $30,000 in the last couple of months. And, you know, I'm pretty freaking proud of myself. And what shocked me was how many people reached out to me, like slid into my DMs and were like, oh my God, I have that much in student loans, or I have more than that in student loans. Like, how are you doing this? Like, that's so awesome. And like being super like supportive versus what I thought was going to be more judgy, right? Mm-hmm. Or like, oh, what are people going to think of this? All the people that I thought were like way more quote unquote successful than me were the ones who were reaching out to me and being like, I have the same problem too. Like,
really? Can you
help me? Yeah. And so, and very stereotypically, right? It was like all my like investment banking friends and like my like doctor and lawyer friends, all of them were like, I'm drowning. Like, I too need help. Right. And so when I realized, okay, that if a lot of people are having this issue and we're all generally pretty smart and pretty ambitious and stuff, like, what is there to be ashamed of? What is there to be ashamed of? And is it necessarily like that we did something wrong? Right. So having that conversation with people and like starting to open up that transparency around it made all the difference in the world, because then people started reaching out to me whenever they saw something that was helpful, they would send it to me. Or whenever they paid off their debt, they would be like, look, for the debt, you'd be so proud of me. I paid off my debt too, right? And all of a sudden, like, talking about money isn't a big deal anymore, isn't a big deal. And that to me made the biggest difference, because the more that you are like, the less afraid you are to talk about it and the less afraid you are to face it, then the more likely you're going to like take it on head on, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I like that. Just getting it out in the open. And it is neat to see the support that people have. Actually, I think even just reaching out to you, I was like, hey, I have a story just like you. I'd love to talk and hear more about your story. So it's definitely encouraging. And I do appreciate for you sharing your story, because yeah, it is encouraging. And it's neat to see people accomplish those things, because it's like, oh, you know what? Maybe I can do it too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I think it's really helpful. This is the thing too. Like, I actually know so many people who have done similar things, but they don't say anything about it. Mm-hmm. And again, because they're still maybe carrying some shame or guilt around the fact that they had it in the first place. And what I've been learning is that by me, and like similar to what you're doing, right? The more that I've talked about it, the more it has given other women like the idea of like, wait. So actually, someone's literally said this to me today. I was talking to one of my clients, and she said, you know, we're similar age, where, you know, we have a lot of things in common. And she's like, I like having you as, you know, part of my life, because she's like, it reminds me, like, if she could do it, I could do it too. And it sounds so cliche, but it's like, but literally, like, what's to stop her from doing it if I was able to do it and we had very similar circumstances, right? So I think the more that we talk about it, more people will realize like real people are actually doing this.
Absolutely. And it's nothing to be ashamed of because there are a lot of people that are accumulating all this debt. And it's just a matter of, hey, we can find a way to go about it and pay it off.
Yeah, for sure.
So I want to move into the R. I love reverse engineer the life goals. Walk me through a little bit. I know there's SMART goals. Do you try to use that approach? I mean, I'm kind of leaning towards you too, since you said, hey, I set timelines. This is, I had 2 years. I'm paying off all this debt here and I really broke it down. Is that kind of how you approach all of your goals when you're building out these financial plans?
I'm going to say this. So I was in corporate HR for 10 years before doing what I do now. And I hate SMART goals. Like I
can't. Okay.
I hate them, but because, like, you know, most people know SMART goals, right? But here's what I don't like about SMART goals is anytime people do SMART goals, they end up making goals that are quote unquote realistic and attainable, right? Like that's the, you know, part two of the letters. And they, and people end up like downgrading their goals because they want to make sure they don't fail at them. And I am actually of like the opposite opinion of like your goals should be big enough that they're worth failing. That's kind of like where my thought is. And like, that's again, another thing that I see very often with a lot of people that I work with is like the reason they're not getting anywhere is because their goals are too small.
Mm-hmm.
And they would rather like knock out these baby goals, which is great. Like it's a good thing to start off with, but never really try to push themselves towards those larger goals because they are so afraid of failing. I told my boss one day, I remember this, like while we're talking about SMART goals. And I told my boss when I was in my last kind of like day job, I was like, I want to be like Taylor Swift. and he was like, but you're not Taylor Swift. And I was like, well, duh, I know I'm not Taylor Swift, right? But even if I achieve like a tenth of her success, that would still be pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Like, absolutely.
I'd be okay with failing at being Taylor Swift if that meant I failed like 90% of the way. 10%, still not bad.
It's right? Not bad at all. Yep.
So I kind of tell this to my clients as well, right? Like one of my goals right now, I said my husband and I, we built our first $1 million of net worth. That was not by accident. It was because literally a couple of years ago, I said, we're going to be millionaires. Like that's going to happen. It's just a matter of when and how.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about breaking down the goals, this is where I actually talked about this on my social media yesterday, where my current goal right now is I want to get my husband and I to accredited investor status by the end of the year. And a lot of people don't know what accredited investor status is, which is simply, there's one of two ways. The way that I'm going about it is I want to have $1 million of net worth minus the value of my home, my primary residence, right? So right now we're about 100K off of that. And so the immediate reaction that people people have given me is like, so you're going to try to, you know, like earn 100K between now and then. I'm like, maybe, maybe not. I don't know. Like maybe I'll get some through investing. Maybe I'll sell something. I don't know. But there's so many ways to get at that goal. And people get fixated on like the one way. They got to find the perfect way to do it. And then they like go down the path of the perfect way. And then when it doesn't work out, instead of going back, reversing and saying like, well, let me try the other 1500 ways that I could go about this. They like, well, I failed. And then they stop.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for me, I'm like, okay, well, I've got 7 months to figure this ish out. I did the math yesterday. I was like, okay, I need to figure out, you know, I don't know, like $15,000 a month. Do I have a solid plan for that yet? No, but I'm going to figure out at least this month and I'll worry about next month. Right. So, you know, instead of like saying, okay, I got to get to the whole 100K and have the plan exactly written out, is like, what can I do in the next 30 days that gets me to, you know, the increment that I need to in order to make this happen.
Mm-hmm. I like that. Cause even kind of like you were saying there early on, like when you talk about the SMART goals or you're sometimes building out these really extensive plans, you're putting yourself in a box. You're not really challenging yourself. And if something doesn't go right to the plan, you think the whole plan is it's over, we're done. I can't continue. Whereas the way you did it, you're a little bit more adaptable when you say, I know the end goal, how I get there. It could change, but I know I'm getting there. And it allows you to just be open to so many different opportunities than someone that kind of puts themselves in a box and says, nope, from A, I got to go to B, then B to C. And I really like the adaptability of how you go about planning your goals.
Thank you. And I think the other aspect of it that I guess people have told me is different is that I'm very vocal about what I'm doing and I don't really care if I fail, right? So, and don't get me wrong, this has come from after years of like being very scared of failure, right? But I kind of learned the hard way that all of those years of being scared to fail, like didn't really get me anywhere. Yeah. And I will say, you know, like, it definitely requires a little bit of faith and it also requires a lot of confidence, right? To be like, okay, well, I messed that up. I'll just try again and I'll keep trying again, right? And I'll tell you, you know, one of my other, you know, one of the reasons I'm trying to get to accredited investor status is because my husband and we're trying to be on track to retire, quote, you know, not really retire, but like be work optional by the time I'm 40, which is 4 years from now. And when I initially started doing, again, like just the pure calculations of it, it said something like, in order to do this, you must be investing like $22,000 a month, like on top of your normal life. And I was just like, wait, I'm sorry, what? Like, that sounds insane, right? And I did almost give up. I was just like, well, that ain't happening. So why even bother, right? But then I kind of came back around to it. I'm like, you know what? Even if I fail 90% of this, right? And I do an extra $2,000 a month. Like, hey, you know what? That's still pretty good.
That's not bad at all. Absolutely.
So might as well try.
Yep. Really like that. That is such a good perspective to have. Like, just go big and get 10%. Tell you what, that's still 10% more than what you have if you didn't do it at all.
Yep. You know, I'll tell you this. This mentality started when I started doing Crush Your Money Goals last year. So I started Crush Your Money Goals in January of 2020, not knowing what the world was going to be like, obviously. And the idea was, and this is exactly the same thing, was what do I want to do? I've paid off my own debt by this point. And I was like, I want to help other people. And how do I establish myself as an expert that can help other people with their money? And so I was like, you know what? And yet I'm very like pie in the sky. I was like $1 million of other people's debt. That's what I want to like erase from the earth. Right. So again, like doing that reverse engineering of like, okay, I could find one person with $1 million of debt, but that doesn't seem like a problem I really want to solve. And like, that's not really going to make a huge impact in the world. One person, I could find 1 million people and each of them pay off $1, but that sounds like a pain in the butt. So and like no real change in their life. So where is this happy medium, right? Like, where do I draw this dial to make it make sense? And so I came up with, you know, 100 people, $10,000 each. And I was like, you know what? That seems doable. If I can find 100 people out of 7.8 billion people to pay off $10,000 of debt, I think that's fair. I told this to a friend of mine and her first reaction was, well, what if you don't do it? Like, what if you don't reach the goal? That, yeah, it was her real reaction. I was like, and I literally looked at her and I was like, then I'm exactly where I am now and okay. Like, you know, whatever, right? And I was like, I don't know, if I hit 500,000, I'll be pretty happy with that. And so I started doing Crush Your Money Goals and I did not find 100 people, right? It took me a lot of like kind of figuring, I mean, I found 100 people, but like 100 people that actually wanted to like be serious about it and like go with my plan and all that stuff, right? So what was amazing was like, I started this community and it was like less than 50 people. And of the 50 people, only like 20 something of them were like super active. Like we're actually like coming to meetings every month and like doing the exercise and stuff like that. Those 20 people paid off like $500,000 of debt.
Are you serious?
Yeah, just between those 20 people, right? So I was like, here we go. This did not by all means go according to plan at all, right? I did not find 100 people and I did not hit my goal. But there was so much that I learned in that process about people, about how to build a business, about how to build a community, how to, you know, navigate a pandemic through all of that. And so, you know, would you call it a failure? In my opinion, I don't think so, right? But if you just went by what you set out originally to do, then like, yeah, I mean, technically it would be. But if that's if that's the approach of how you take everything in life, then like there's not going to be a lot of things that you're going to be super satisfied with.
Yeah, absolutely. And just the impact that you had on those people's lives. I mean, you took 20 people and helped them pay off $500,000. And kind of even going back to your friend where she said, well, what if you failed? The reverse is, well, what happens if you help one person pay off $10,000 worth of debt? And they would be extremely grateful for that opportunity. It's like, that's the type of impact that you were willing to take that because you knew how important it is to pay off the debt.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And, you know, I'll tell you, like, one of those people, she paid off, one person paid off 100. And I'm still, and you know, it's like a year and a half later and we're still working together and she's come through all of my programs. And what is so like special about that whole experience is like, while I failed at the original plan, a whole bunch of other things came out of that plan that was totally not planned for and way better than I would have ever imagined. So just starting off with and doing something and actually taking the action towards it led into like five other directions that would have never come up on my radar if I just didn't start at all.
Absolutely. That I love it. That is good. Just start. Have a good big goal. Get started. Now, moving into the you mm-hmm. a little bit here, because you're talking about, you know, time, energy, money, and obviously you've helped not all these people working, you just graduated, you got your own debt that you're working on, building your net worth. How are you managing all that in an efficient way that you're saying, hey, you know what, here's how we can go and achieve this. Here's how I'm going to go about doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. So I said this to someone yesterday, which was, she was like, I do consultations for people and she like had her list of debts and she was like, I've been trying to pay this off for how many years? And she's like, I've paid for like every single course in the world. I have every budgeting tool. I don't know what I'm doing wrong. Right. Maybe you have the answer. And like, I kind of just said point blank to her. I was like, I just said, you're not going to like what I have to say, but you don't actually have a money issue. You have a time and energy issue. And what I, you know, and I said to her, which I say to a lot of people is like, money actually isn't real. Money is just a representation of how you spend your time and energy. It's the physical representation of where, what you chose to be important to you. So if your money has gone awry, it's probably because your time and energy has also gone awry. So when I talk about using your resources efficiently, I'm not talking about saving money. I'm talking about saving time and energy. And so as an example, you know, one of my core tenets is, which like people can't wrap their brain around sometimes is like, you need to work less. Like your problem is like you work too much. And then people are like, wait, I don't understand. How am I supposed to make more money if I like work less? And it just, and I'm like, because it's possible to work less and make more money. You just got to pick the right things to do, right? So I like to tell people I'm an inherently super lazy person. I am not going to expend more energy or time if I don't have to, like to get the same result,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, I don't know, like why would I work 10 times harder to get the exact same result, right? So one of the things that I often tell people before they even look at this, you know, getting paid down their debt is like, you got to make the time to make this happen. So a lot of people are like, oh, if I just had a plan, like I'll be able to do it. Or if I just had the right tools, I'll be able to do it. I'm like, if you don't have the time to implement the plan or pick up the tools, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the first things I to ask people, and this is like, you know, in my surveys, when I ask people if they, you know, when they come, like they want to work with me, I'm like, are you willing to invest the time? And usually they'll say yes, right? They always say yes, right? Like, of course, I'll invest the time. I'm like, no, really.
Absolutely.
So then I'm like, this is what it's going to require. It's going to require to come like to this, you know, these meetings at this time and to like meet with me at this time. And they're like, oh, well, I don't know now. I don't know if I, and then they start coming up with all these reasons like why they don't have time. Right.
Yep.
So like being able to recognize, like we all have the exact 168 hours in a day. Like that is a fixed, I mean, in a week, right? Like that's a fixed pie. So if you are going to be able to make a dent in any of your money goals, like the time has to be freed up and you have to have the energy to do it. This is why I'm like, not like a huge fan of some like other personal finance stuff where it's like, you just got to hustle and like, got to like work. Like I did that. I followed that advice in the beginning and I burned out real quick.
Mm-hmm.
So now when I teach people, it's like, let's go the path of least resistance. Let's try that first. And then you can add that on.
Sounds good. Yeah. Awesome. That is good. And I loved what you said about money is the physical representation, how you spend your time. I think that's a light bulb moment right there. That could go on a billboard, I think, too.
Maybe I will do that.
There you go. I really do like that. And kind of now moving through crushing your money goals, I think we still got the S, the H. Can you walk us through what those two are?
Yeah. So S is arguably my favorite part, which is spend on what matters to you or spend unapologetically. Like, I'm really tired of the conversations like we talked about earlier about like coffee and blah, blah, blah. Like, coffee is not what's making people broke. That's just my personal opinion. I don't drink coffee. I'm Asian. I drink a lot of bubble tea. And even when I was paying down debt, I was like, I'm not giving up bubble tea. I don't care. There's no point in living if I have to do that. So, you know, what I often have to tell my clients and remind them when we're working on their budgets is, you can afford anything you want. You just can't afford everything all at once right now. Mm. Right. So you got to pick and choose what matters to you right now. And so some of the hard choices that I have to have with clients, as an example, is like, they'll be frustrated, like they haven't paid down their debt. Right. And I'm like, well, what did you do with the money instead? And it's like, oh, well, we went on vacation. And then, like, you know, I put my kids in daycare, or like this like accident happened. And I'm like, well, were those things not worthwhile? And they're like, no, they're totally worthwhile. I don't, you know, like, I'm like, then don't, like, stop beating yourself up for those decisions. Those are the choices that you made. Like, let's be happy that we made them. And like, let's stop living in the past. Let's move on into the next month. Right. So spending on what matters. And I'll give you like a real example in my life currently. Right. So I'm on the net worth kick, right? Like, I'm really trying to get to this $1 million net worth situation. Right. And this past month, my father passed away, and it was a really, really rough month.
Like, hey, I'm sorry for your loss. That is tough.
So, you know, it was probably like the worst month of my life.
Yeah. Right?
And guess what? My net worth went down, and as it should have, because I had to get on a plane without like no warning, right? And I had to pay for hospital bills. I had to pay for funeral costs. I had to help take care of my mom. Like, there was like 100 different things that had to be done. And would anyone go back and say, well, Bernadette, you know what, but you didn't pay down debt. Like,
yeah.
you didn't hit your money goals this month, right? Like, no, like no like reasonable person mm-hmm. would say that, right? But for some reason, it takes like an extreme situation for people to realize that that's kind of ludicrous, mm-hmm. But not give themselves the grace when, like, for example, I had a client who messaged me today. She was like, this is the month that my toilet breaks. And I was like, well, good thing we have a contingency fund, and that's what it's there for when ish happens. Ha ha ha. You know, like, you know, there's a surefire way to not make mistakes or to save money. It's called like not living. Like, you could just stop doing everything. And like, I don't advocate for that either. Right. So sometimes, and actually more times than not, it's okay to pick other things than just money.
Yeah. I think that is very important to say, even kind of going back to the very beginning where you said, when you were working all the time and you had all this debt and you were just so miserable. The flip side of that is also you can spend no money at all and you're just trying to pay off and still be miserable. There's got to be some sort of balance there. You can't go through life just being miserable. You got to find out kind of what works for you. Be present, like you said, living your legacy, not visualizing, not seeing it. It's, you got to be present in the moment. So I do like that, where you're just like, we can't be on the extremes. You got to live life.
Yeah, yeah. And then the H in CRUSH stands for hustle, hustle, hustle. And in the early days, it used to mean like, go find like all the jobs and work as hard as you can. But then I like came to my senses and was like, no, let's like work as little as possible. And so when I say hustle, 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 it's diversifying your income streams and how can you have multiple ways to make money. And I actually don't believe in side hustling in the sense of like, I don't think there is such a thing as like a side hustle. I think every hustle is like equally worthy, you know, mm-hmm. $200, it makes you $1,000. Like, respect to, you know, regardless yeah. of the amount. And something that, you know, started to come to fruition for me. So like in this past month, when I literally had to stop doing, you know, my regular day job, right? I had just like stop everything and like take care of family stuff. At first, and I told this to my business partner, I was like, you know, I'm like worried about, you know, my business. Like it made me realize like, wow, a lot of this stuff is like predicated on me physically having to be there and like work and like job. But we still had money coming in the door, and we still ended up with the same amount of income that we would have if I had been working, because we had started putting these things into place with my business, with other streams of income. Like we had three Airbnb guests who came in and stayed while we were somewhere else, right? We had investment income come in. We had my husband got a commission check from his real estate business that we didn't actually have to work. Like I literally didn't work almost at all in May, and we still had money coming in the door. And so when I tell people like, you need to find ways that, you know, to make money other than just trading your time for it, that is where, you know, you can make significant progress on your money goals. But it's also the last part of crash, because everyone skips to that thing first.
Yeah, kind of like you said earlier on, that's what you did right away. You were like, oh, I got to go. And you get burned out. And then next thing you know, you're just slowly kind of slip right back to what you were originally doing. It's going to be that progression. But I really like how you put it, where you're diversifying your income. Because, I mean, we've all heard it, you know, diversifying your assets in terms of like your investments and your 401ks. But I really liked how you said, you know, diversify your income. It doesn't matter if it's $50, $100, $2,000, all of it's important, because like you said, you never know what's going to happen. You know, it's life. It's all sorts of things that you just can't predict and you can't account for. So it's so important to have all those different incomes that are coming in to kind of help support you in case of there's downsides.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, something I love, like what a lot of people say, I had three people say this to me even today. They're like, well, I want my money to work for me. And I'm like, I hear you. Me too. Right. But like,
absolutely.
In order for that to happen though, you must have the money in the first place and you must put it in the right places. And, you know, this is my opinion. Like, to me, there's really no such thing as passive income, because any kind of passive income like requires you to have the income in the first place, which usually requires you to make it unless you like inherited it or something. Right.
So, yep.
You know, most passive income sources start out with a lot of work in the beginning in order to pay off later on. And a lot of people I see, like, they just quit too soon.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I do like that word. You do need some sort of income in order to make your money start working for you. And even kind of, I think Rich Dad, Poor Dad talked about in his book, like he was blown away. He wanted to be this entrepreneur. And right away his rich dad said, okay, go get a job, because you got to have some sort of income at first before you can get started. You need that initial income stream.
And, you know, on the hustle, like I was talking to someone yesterday who was like, I have 16 different, like, you know, 16 different ideas for businesses. And I was like, well, which one is going to make you the most money? Let's go with that one first. Like, let's stop like doing like the onesie twosies here. Like, let's go for the big kahuna here.
Absolutely. So what would you recommend someone start now? What's one of the first things you say? I mean, they want to go down this path. They're tired of all the school debt. What are some recommendations that you would make for someone that's just kind of push them over the edge a little bit to get started?
Yeah. So, you know, one thing that's super easy is just start collecting not just knowledge, but collecting the different types of opinions that resonate with you. So, you know, there's a plethora of people who are giving out financial advice, right? Mm-hmm. So there's no shortage. Like, no one can say now, well, nobody taught me. Like, there is a lot of people who want to teach you. You just got to find the right one. So my first suggestion to people is like, go out and start finding, you know, experts. And like, this is a great way. Listen to some podcasts, right? Listen, you know, watch some YouTube videos. That's literally how I started, was podcasts and YouTube videos. But then take it a step further. And instead of just like taking it at face value, like what people say, like research those people and understand what their stories are, like, and what resonates with you about them. And find people who are not just like role models for you money-wise, but role models for you, like in other aspects of their life, right? So again, for me, like why I started doing what I was doing is because like, they're just, I mean, I don't know any other Filipino women like who are doing this, right? I was like, okay, you know, I hear what you're saying, some of the other people, but how do I tell my tichos and titas that like, I'm not going to go get, you know, stay in my full-time job? Like, that's just not a conversation that's like going to bode well. Right. So How do you find people who like, you hear some of their story and like, oh my gosh, like that resonates with me. Right. And it doesn't have to just be like the obvious things that people will go for. Like, obviously if she's female, obviously if she's, you know, a woman of color, obviously if she's a millennial or whatever, like listen to people's actual stories and see what kind of people they are. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the other aspect of like, where do you start is like, once you find, you know, two or three people that like really resonate with you and actually know what they're talking about, that's the other thing, was like, don't be following people who like just started yesterday or whatever, right? Like take some time to like find some people who've been doing this a while. And who have the results. And again, it doesn't have to be like me where it's like, oh, well, now I have, you know, I've done all these things. Like if they're at this, the stage where you feel like, oh, that's where I'm at too. Like that's a good place to be also, right? So find those people, but then actually really build the relationships with those people, like actually pull these people into your circle of influence. So that's actually one of the things I teach in my courses is to tell people like, and I'm sure you've heard this too, right? Like we're the average of like the five people.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Our life, right? So like that it applies to our money, right? It doesn't, so like if you look at who you talk about with money, like if those five people aren't going where you're going, like we need to level up that circle. So start building those relationships with people who are going where you're going when it comes to your money, and keep having those conversations. Like that's the best thing I can say. And then, you know, self-serving, like come take a class with me.
Absolutely, definitely. Awesome. I love the advice. Listen to the experts. Find people that have maybe a similar story, but have gone through something similar that you're looking for. Build the relationships. Be aware of who you're surrounding yourself with, because it's so important. Like you said, you're closest to your five, you know, people that are around you. You're the product of five friends, I believe is how it is. I just think that's so important. Awesome. Thank you so much, Bernadette. I really do appreciate having you on the podcast. And if you want to connect with Bernadette, make sure you go check out crushyourmoneygoals.com. You can also follow Bernadette on LinkedIn, Bernadette Joy. She's also on Twitter at Bernadette Joy. And all these links are in the description. So make sure you go check her out. She's putting out some awesome content. And of course, go check out one of her classes. Thank you so much, Bernadette.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you everyone for tuning in to this week's podcast. If you've enjoyed the show, please leave a review on the platform you're listening to the show through. It helps get the show out there to more people and allows me to continue doing what I love to do. If you want to connect, I have the DIY Financial Sense Facebook group that allows all of us to help each other out in our financial journey. There's a link to the group in the description, and I'll see you all next week.